episode 288 of the Washed Up Walk-Ons podcast, brought to you by DRF Sports. Today, Jack Kerner joins the show. In the beginning, we didn't know if he was going to... I thought he was asleep, maybe. We got a little confused on times. Eventually, he shows up and gives us one hell of an episode. This guy gave us one hell of a career in the black and gold, and you guys are going to get to hear all about it. You know what it is? Let's have a day, baby. Let's go.
Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, episode 288 of the podcast, and we may or may not be getting a special guest in the middle of this one. He was supposed to come on. We had talked to him. I had talked to him. Kluver talked to him. I think our guy forgot, maybe overslept a little bit. So if he pops in during this podcast, then the podcast is going to get a whole lot better. Yeah. But if not, we apologize because we were supposed to have a fun guest and honestly one of the kings of the walk-ons. Yeah. On the podcast. So he'll come on soon. If he doesn't come on today, I'm a little bit flustered. Kluver, take it out of my hands.
Well, we don't have to be flustered. We got plenty to talk about. Kevin, we have Kevin on the phone. Kevin checking in from a remote location. Welcome to the podcast, Kev.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Hey, what's it look out there? What's the weather like? What are we looking like out there in eastern Iowa?
We're actually in the state of Illinois right now. It's got a few inches of snow last night. Roads aren't in great condition.
Okay. Well, we need you, our correspondent, to be careful out there on the live reporting. If you find any tornadoes, chase those down for us. Thanks a lot. So,
will do.
You're muted, Drake, trying to talk.
I said leave it to Kevin to have to drive 3 hours in the snow for some ass.
Well, that's the... Is that what were you seeing the woman, Kev?
What else is he doing in Chicago?
It was my nephew's birthday party yesterday, actually.
Oh, that's nice.
Now I feel like an asshole. I guess I'll just go.
As you should. You should feel like an asshole and disgusted.
And you know what? That's not new for Drake. Feeling like an asshole, not new.
And being disgusting, also asshole, not new. So, yeah.
Patrick's kid, I assume?
Yep.
Nice. Do they live in old Chicago again?
No. They're still down in St. Louis. He's doing med school down there. Just her family lives in Chicago. Most of my family's in Chicago, so
they were
Go home to Chicago for his birthday.
I see. We were seeing Grandma and Grandpa. Grandma and Grandpa Ward. Oh, yes. I bet your fucking parents are just the lootiest grandparents on earth, Kev.
They like to spoil their kids for sure. Their grandkids, I should say.
Yeah,
that doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
Kev, you gotta have some little. We need some little psych wards running around soon. Let's get that going.
I don't think the world needs that quite yet.
Okay. We got us some action. Yesterday there was two upsets, according to Vegas.
I called one of them.
Drake called one of them, and I tried to call another one. I told you guys I wanted to take the Bengals. I trust in Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase is basically unstoppable, and their defense found a way to get it done. We're going to talk about some.
I was going to say that game did not play out like anyone expected it to.
Not at all.
A game like that. It was a defensive battle, dude. I was expecting some points out of those two teams.
What was it, 6-6 at half?
9-6
at half.
9-6. Yeah.
16-16 going into the fourth quarter. Man, what a dogfight. And to be honest, obviously the Bengals and Joey Buckets pull away in that one. McPherson got it, just absolute nuts of steel. Two kickers win the games, by the way. And LeVar Woods on Twitter, he tweeted out, he said, "Hey, looks like special teams make a difference at all levels." And you know what? It's true. There's a lot of people out there that are thanking their special teamers today.
I was going to say there's a couple teams, Cincinnati at the forefront, who are thanking their kickers and giving them Christmas bonuses a couple weeks late. Like, guys are just passing out checks in the locker room to these kickers after they just won them the biggest playoff games of most of their careers.
Yeah. Two games both come down to a time expiring field goal, which kind of odd that both games come down to that.
As a football fan, what more could you want, right? Say you don't have a dog in any of those four teams, like a dog in any of those fights. It's just awesome. A couple games of football to watch.
Yeah, I thought it was – it's all I want, right? Like, I don't have a team. And I don't really think – I mean, I know that Drake cheers for George. I think we all cheer for George. We'll talk about George in a second. And, you know, we cheer for the other Hawks too, but I don't think any of us are diehard – organization fans for an NFL squad, and you just want good football. And that's watching Lambeau in the snow, the snow's coming down, those two teams go after it. Beautiful stuff. The long snapper for the Packers is not great.
Just got bullied.
Not
just got
great.
Absolutely. I don't know if I've ever seen an NFL man get bullied like that before.
If you watched enough punts, you'd find that every once in a while a long snapper doesn't get it done. And yesterday on the blocked
punt, gets pushed back like your hairline, dude.
Worse. And he let that. Now, this was always one of my fears. This was always one of my, not a fear, but a concern, right? And I think it was a concern of the Packers scout. Ironically, is the one who talked to Kevin, I'm pretty sure, at the pro day. Is that right, Kev?
San Fran.
Oh, it was San Fran. Well, there you go. And told Kevin, hey, your long snapper's impressive. We just wish he was taller. And, you know, height is great, but your guy could burrow down and stick a foot in the ground.
You had that leverage, man.
Hey, low man wins. And
you're like a... You're like an armadillo down there.
Hey, when we're talking low man in the special teams game, somebody's starting with a little bit of a 5 yard lead there. And that's me, because I'm 5'10". Everybody else, they're up on the skyscrapers. They're hanging out with Spider-Man on top of the city. I'm chilling down. I hang with the worms in the dirt, and I'm there, and I'll stick a foot in the ground. And guess what, Packers? It's your loss, because you're out. You're done.
You know, at the end of the day, the dude could have just fell down and like
anything
would have done a better job for protecting the punt than what he did there.
Tackle him. Fucking hold something. Otherwise, that your punter is getting one straight up the ass and you're losing a game for your entire team and fan base. Because
I mean, literally that day, if you look like just watching it, I just felt like, you know, like Green Bay is just winning this game.
Yeah.
San Francisco can do absolutely nothing on offense. There's literally nothing that happens. I mean, there's just no way you can conceive Green Bay losing this game and then that happens.
Yeah.
Completely changed the game. I don't think they win. San Francisco wins without that play.
No. I mean, they tie it up with that. And, you know, neither offense was doing great. But the Packers was doing a little bit better, and the Packers defense was just stuffing them. I mean, the Packers defense was on fire. Dude, Rashawn Gary, that guy's good.
He's a dog.
That guy can play, huh? And, yeah, man, I mean, I'm telling you, for those that just watch punts or PATs and or you watch a Hawkeye game and they go out and it's Torrey Taylor time, and, it you know, to some extent, Iowa is probably the most paid attention to special teams in the country. I don't know if there's another college that cares more about it throughout the fan base and the actual program. So we're in a unique position, but most times people just watch those plays as like foregone conclusions. All right, it's a punt, snap's going back, kick goes off the foot, and team resets down the field. What happened yesterday, and I got several people who DM'd me about it, was like, hey, why did that punt get blocked? And in the NFL, well, actually in college too, the rule is that you get 1 second. The long snapper gets 1 second to basically snap the ball, set back a step or two, and pick his head up, right? After that, the defender can initiate contact. And in football, 1 second is turned into a half second, right? It's essentially as long as you don't head up the snapper in alignment and come across and smoke him as he moves his arms, they basically consider that 1 second, and it's free ball game. I'll say this. It was a snowy environment. Your feet aren't just stuck in the ground like they would be on a nice dry day. But when it comes down to the brass tacks and you got a block of fucking, I don't know if it was probably a backup linebacker. I don't know who blocked it. He was a big guy. Yeah, he was a big guy. You got to find a way as the chump long snapper, the non-athlete, to just make one play. You got to come through. Otherwise, you get made fun of. And that guy is going to get made fun of. Also, he's a former Iowa State Cyclone. So that's...
Oh, man. That just makes it even sweeter that the Niners beat him on that from a clown. Dude, how bad does that feel for the whole offseason being that guy? Like, does he just worry every day of his life that he's not going to have a job the next year?
He feels absolutely horrible. He's.
I mean, it's on the same level as, like, you know, you're down two, shot out the field goal team out there for a 40-yard field goal, and the kicker just shanks one. You know, it's the exact same level. He does his job and makes, you know, an attempt to block this dude, and the Packers win this game probably 95% of the time.
It's even worse, Kev, because, oh, look at this. It's even worse because, you know, a lot of the times the kicking game isn't 100% and it is what it is. Sometimes luck's involved. Jack Kerner, welcome to the show, my man.
Hey, what's up?
Did you just wake up?
Let's go, dude. The king.
No, I didn't. I couldn't remember if you said 10 or 11, and I'm on Eastern time, too.
Okay, so I didn't
think about that.
Okay, well. You're here now.
Yes, sir.
We were just talking about the Packers-Niners game last night and how the long snapper fucked up the entire thing.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice that. I was watching that game.
You didn't? So on the blocked punt, the long snapper just let the guy right through.
I didn't even see that. I wasn't watching closely enough on that play. Wow.
Those fucking specialists, huh?
Yeah.
You hate those guys, right?
Oh, no. Specialists, they hold a great place in my heart ever since my freshman year. Locker buddies with the one and only Tyler Kluver.
Oh, look at that. How sweet. How sweet. He's just sucking up.
He's gotten absolutely no more fun since then, Jack. He was a loser back then, and he's still a bum.
What do you remember about that, Jack, when you first came in?
You know, I just remember, not really knowing too many guys. You know, you got kind of a small circle with the guys you're in the dorms with, obviously, and the guys in your class. But, you know, you're still trying to figure out, you know, what's what in the program and everything when you're a young guy. And, you know, I appreciated the kind of insight that you were able to give me back then. You were definitely a guy that was pointing me in the right ways and, give me to understand what was what in that like first camp for sure.
All right, what type of insight were you getting from Tyler Kluver?
I'm curious.
I just gotta know.
Oh, you know, just typical where to be and when to be, and just kind of, you know, the way the program works.
Mostly. I was good at that. I knew where to be and when to be.
Absolutely.
That's about it. Was there any Well, I mean, we'll go back to it, but. First camp, first year, was there any eye-opening moments for you as a Hawk?
I think it was probably, you know, as a walk-on guy, it was getting, you know, you guys know how it goes, a couple reps here and there in that first camp. And I just remember I got one rep and I didn't really know what I was doing. And Coach Parker just laid into me like you guys know he does. And I just it was like, an eye opening. I was like, can he talk to me like that? Like, is that, like, and that definitely kind of like humbled me instantly and was like, all right, well, I guess this is how it is for everybody. Cause I obviously learned that that's how he talks to everybody. So I didn't think that I was too, that he was really just on me. So it was, that right there was, you know, I grew up in K through 12 at Catholic schools. And they weren't talking to like that. They weren't talking to us like that at Dowling. So that was an eye opener and an ear opener for sure.
I gotta say this, you know, maybe you'll agree. Did you find that Phil was harder on the guys that he expected more out of? Like I feel like he always saw people's potential, and if he felt like they weren't playing up to it, those were the guys he was harder on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he said all the time, like the only thing that you need to worry about is when I stop coaching you and stop yelling at you. Like that's when you know you got a problem. So that definitely, and once you started to figure out that is his style and everything, then you know, you gotta hear what the message he's trying to say is rather than the literal words, or you'll be in for a tough time.
The not so nice words in between.
Yeah, absolutely.
How much did you and Phil's relationship evolve in 5 years? Because I always think that dynamic is really cool, from a guy who goes to being like, whoa, can this guy that I don't even know talk to me like that? Like, is this allowed? To then what you guys end up with in 5 years. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it grew tremendously over the 5 years. I'd say my first 2 years, you know, I was on the scout team, and you know, you're barely even in the position meetings a little bit. You're always at, you're lifting during that time, or you got to be in some scout meetings and stuff like that. So I really was just kind of in, out of sight, out of mind, but always in the back of the room, just taking diligent notes and trying to just picture myself on that film, because you know the reps are limited for myself. But so I was just made sure that, you know, when my time would come, that I'd be able to maximize those reps. And so that's what I was able to do. You know, going from in 2018, played on special teams, but I was still just whatever the lowest string was possible as a safety. But somehow then next year I was able to find my way starting. So just developing that relationship, that how much he takes into account, just being able to trust the guys that he puts on the field to know what they're doing, and how that is just kind of holds more weight than almost anything else, is just being a trustworthy guy for him. And I understood that early on, and that's kind of what he was looking for. And so I just kind of really, really threw myself into that, just understanding the game of football and the way our defense works.
What an answer, this guy.
How long do you think it took for you to kind of click, you know, what your role is on the defense and all that kind of stuff, and how the defense works, you know, making the calls, all checks, all that kind of stuff? How long do you say it really took for you for it all to click?
I'd say it's really started to click my second spring ball. Is when I really started to understand, rather than trying to memorize with every single formation, you know, what the coverage is against this and the checks, and you know, what coverages are better against specific route concepts and stuff of that nature. That's what I was trying to do early on, was just memorize everything. And I've quickly learned that is just impossible. You'll get overwhelmed. There's no way to possibly memorize all that stuff. So I understood that you got to understand the concept and the reasoning behind all this stuff. You'll never be able to memorize it. You just got to understand why certain stuff works better against certain formations and concepts and everything. And once I started to figure all that stuff out, then it really just started to snowball, and everything made complete sense. When you know why the guys in front of you are doing certain stuff and why you're doing what you're doing, it's way easier to know the what. So I'd say I really started to grasp that concept in that second spring ball. And then obviously that led into that, you know, third camp, and it was good for me for sure.
I 100% agree. It usually takes 2 years to feel really good about the defense. Like you said, you get to understand the whys, and then you can extrapolate as to like how everyone moves around you and in front of you. Mm-hmm. And the reason I kind of asked that question is a couple weeks back, we're talking about the new kid coming to town, Xavier Wampa. Mm-hmm. And you know, the guys want to know, like, hey, can he play right away? And I'm like, you know, that'd be tough. It'd be really tough. So I kind of want to ask you, do you think someone can step in and play safety right away and take him out of the picture? Who do you like to fill that void that you have? Is, you know, because that free safety position is really the quarterback of the back end there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think it is possible, but I do think that it, like you said, it's very, very hard. You know, it is going from high school to college. It is hard to, that concept I was talking about of trying to just memorize everything versus truly understanding just the ebbs and flows of all 11 people on the field and why they're doing what they're doing. That's tough to grasp right away. But it is possible. I mean, when you asked that, I was thinking about Dane, you know, and how his true freshman year, he was getting mixed in a little bit with Cash, like as the season started to go on. And then by the end of the year, he was, you know, he playing all the pretty much 70% of the snaps at Cash. It takes sometimes, you know, the progression of the season to go along for someone to really get it. And, but it's difficult in camp with like limited meeting times and limited reps and stuff like that. But when we're in season, that's where it really can start to snowball a little bit more for guys that are able to stay in the meetings and everything. So I think it's definitely possible. If he was going to be playing a lot this year, it might be on the back half of the season, I imagine. But our room, we still got a lot of great guys in there, even though me, Dane, and Matt left. Obviously, Quinn Schulte, he's been behind me the past 2 years, and he's one of those guys that, you know, kind of like myself, just commits himself to, and he's understanding of what Coach Parker's looking for. He was looking for a trustworthy guy that he knows will know how to do his job every time. And Quinn he's realized that, and he's committed himself to that. So he's done a great job. And I think he's probably, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him in that spot this year.
Quinn Schulte.
They just keep giving White walk-ons number 30, and they just keep playing free safety for the Hawks, man. It is like getting out of control.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. That's why
I think safety might be one of like the highest percentage of like walk-ons turn starters for Iowa.
Safety and fullback, baby.
15 years.
Safety and fullback.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's because we're not offering too many fullbacks out of high school. You know?
Hey, Kevin, suck me, dude. It still counts.
No, it is funny, though. I mean, it goes all the way back to like Pagel and mm-hmm. Considine. And I mean, it's just like this Quinn Schulte guy now. He could play a little football, huh, Jack?
Yeah. And he's a savvy football player. And, you know, he's the guy that, you know, we're on the bus to the hotel on Friday, and I'm just, you know, on my phone listening to music or whatever. And he turns around, he shows me the Friday Packer, he shows me a play like, all right, if they do this, what are we doing? And that's just how his mind works. And we're
shit.
Just getting ready for practice and something and putting our cleats on. His locker's right, was right next to mine, just asking me about just something so obscure that we've only seen one or two times in my whole entire 5-year career, but he's asking about it. Like, what are you doing if you see this? That's how he works. He's just obsessed with just knowing more and just being prepared for every single situation. And that is why I think that he will be successful. So,
I know,
you know, whether he starts right away or he will be playing a decent amount of safety throughout the rest of his career.
Yeah, Kevin's fully invented hearing that. Kevin's got an erection right now hearing all that, because
I mean, you love it. I mean, like I said earlier, that free safety position's the quarterback of the back end there. He's making all the checks, all the calls. If he's not on the right page with everyone else, that's when big plays get given up. And if you got some guy who's prepared for everything, then you feel pretty good about everyone being on the same page. You can be in the wrong defense, but if everyone's on the same page, you can at least mitigate disasters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Sounds like we're in good hands there. So that gives me a lot of confidence. You're already making me feel good, Jack. Now how you would take 100% credit for all of Seth and Jack Campbell's success because you're making the calls, or like only 80%, or how much?
I like 80, like 3 or 4%. I'll take it, but you know, the other small percentage about why they're so good is just their motor, dude. I mean, they're just behind them in practice. They make every single guy better in practice. And that's why we had such a good defense this year, is because everybody's flying to the ball because we do it in practice. There's almost like sometimes Coach Parker and Coach Wallace, they got to pull the leash back on those guys sometimes because we're running out of scout running backs because they're just they're just going way too hard, and it brings the juice out of the rest of the guys. You know, when it's a Tuesday and we got pads on and it's a little bit on the back half of the season, it's a little cold and guys are still sore, and you just see Jack Campbell and Seth, the guys leading our team in tackles, just still sticking guys on team run. Like, yeah, that makes you think like, okay, well, I'm not more sore than them. Like, I can do just as well as them. So
you're telling me
it brings the intensity of the whole practice up.
These two guys are running you guys out of scout team players. That's how hard they're going in practice.
I mean, yeah, it's just how they're wired. They don't have a submissive bone in their body. It's crazy.
Yeah. Seth,
are they still doing that?
Like the word grit.
Absolutely.
Are they still doing that, that point system during camp, or, whether the ball, I forget what they call it, man.
Ballhawks. Yep.
Ballhawk. Yeah. They still doing that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And now they've made it, they've actually changed it a little bit, because obviously it used to be mostly like DBs that were winning it all the time. But now they count sacks for D linemen as like 2 points. So now, like this past camp, I mean, Joe Evans and Valk were, they ran away with the competition. It was nuts. It was impossible. You couldn't get enough picks or PBUs or scoops to compete with that.
Talk to me about Joe Evans, man. Another Central Iowa guy, a little walk-on action. What's so special about him?
He's just another one of those dudes who they just committed to putting in the work in the weight room. You know, and he's another one of those guys that sometimes you got to peel back a little bit in practice. He's just, I've talked to, you know, a couple offensive scout guys that are just like, you know, we're in shells and I'm dividing back on Joe Evans. And he's treating it like it's game day. Like, he's putting his shoulder right into my chest and making me not excited to do it again next time. And he's just another one of those guys, just super gritty, just a freak in the weight room. He's earned everything he's been given. We couldn't be happier to see that kid being successful too.
There's some scout team players who are walk-ons right now, who are the guys that you're talking about, who we're going to talk to in like 3 or 4 years when they're done. And we're going to ask them, hey,
and they're going to talk about how big of a dick Joe Evans was in practice. He's like, listening to you tell that story made me want to fight. Like, that would have been a big issue.
I can already hear these guys going, yeah, man, freshman year, there's a guy named Joe Evans, and he was just fucking sticking me on the regular. And I would go in from practice and just sit at my locker and contemplate if I'm going to come back the next day, because I don't know if I can do this.
So here's the thing I got to say from my time on the scout team. Drake, you may or may not agree. Kluver, you would have no idea. Jack, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I always thought our best players were the biggest dicks to the scout team players. So, like, I got bullied by Brandon.
Louis Trinka-Passat.
Yeah. James Morris. Yep,
exactly. James Morris was a notorious dick to the scout team players. So, yep. Jack, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that there definitely is some correlation there. Because, you know, when we're talking about these guys, like Jack Campbell, Seth, and Joe, I mean, these guys are – just having field days on these guys. You know, you obviously know that the protections and the run blocking, it's not exactly what we're going to be seeing on game day. God knows they try and they work their asses off, but you know, they're going to get theirs and they're going to hit those guys. And they're just the nicest dudes off the field is the thing. That's like, that's right. Nobody can be mad at them. They're just like the nicest dudes off the field. It's just, they do that stuff on the field, and you just know that, like, that's just simply how they're how they're wired, and they can't turn it off when they're on the field. And everybody understands that. There was really probably only like three like scuffles on this, like major scuffles on the defensive scout team field this year. Jack Campbell was in the mix for I think two of them, and Joe was the other
one, I think. So he's a scrapper.
Yeah, there's definitely, but that's what we love. Like, it doesn't, the coaches don't even get mad at that stuff, because they let it carry on for like the 30, 45 seconds that it takes, because, you know, they want these scout team guys to like, you know, have a little bit of grit and moxie to them too, and not just get pushed around. And that's what makes makes everybody better. So
I was going to say, I think part of why the guys that we're talking about, Morris, Passat, Sheriff, the guys who just, I mean, outsider walks into practice and you're like, why is this guy actually just bullying the shit out of this scout team? Right. Mm-hmm. It's because they know the value of that scout team. Mm-hmm. And they want, almost in a way, in their switch is flipped on 110% all the time mindset, the kind of mode that they're in during practice.
Mm-hmm.
They want that to be reciprocated by said scout team, because they know, one, they may have been on the scout team, probably were on the scout team at one point, right? And mm-hmm. they know that the only thing making them better and preparing them for game day, outside of them just watching film of the other team, is those scout team players mimicking what they're going to see. So the harder that they can get those guys to go and fire them up, the more, the better the look they're going to get, and the more prepared they're going to feel. So, man, it's just, that's, some of that shit is the most fun to watch in practice. Do you ever just like sit back there and you're just like giggling because Jack's punching somebody in the face, or?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's awesome to see the scout team guys get fired up. And the best part about scout team this year was, Justin Flood was the scout team head coach this year, quite literally.
I love Flood.
Yeah. Talk about a guy who's worked his way from the bottom. When I was a freshman, and you guys were seniors, he was the orange sweatshirt guy, just running the ball where it needed to be. And now he's defensive assistant or analyst or whatever exactly he is, graduate assistant. But he was the scout team head coach, and he's firing these guys up. He's screaming at Campbell. He's screaming at me. He's screaming at Riley for giving up a double move. We're on a bit of a roll. He's like, this is the number one defense in the country. You guys are terrible. Campbell will miss a tackle. He'll just say like, you're terrible, Campbell. Like, you missed that. And that is boiling Campbell's blood, obviously. And he's running around. The whole like scout offensive line, when it's transition to the period, he's squirting water in their mouths. Like, and he's making highlight tapes for the scout team guys. There's a fantasy like point system for the fantasy guy or for the scout team.
Oh,
guy.
Dude,
it's a whole big.
That's awesome.
I know. So these guys, they care about it. They love practice, because it actually like they're like competing, not only like to against guys that are playing on Saturdays, but also with each other. So like for the scout fantasy team, they're competing to be on like the highlight video, which like the whole team watched this past year. It was sweet. It's awesome. A lot of credit. A lot of credit goes to him for that.
Flood?
I just remember back when Flood was, he was like the ball spot guy, and the poor guy would have both the offensive and defensive coaches chirp at him for given bad spots, first downs, or short of first downs, whatever.
Talk about started shit. From the bottom, man. And his fucking – is his voice still the same way it is? Like,
oh, yeah. He's still – people still – when he's chattering at us, talking about our missed tackles or our missed assignments, people are yelling at him, go smoke another pack of cigs, Fly. And call him garbage man and everything. And
over here, on me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Love to hear that.
That's unbelievable. He's going all out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. That's an incredible story. How did Jack Kerner find himself to Iowa City in the first place?
Well, I was committed to South Dakota. I had offers from UNI, South Dakota, and South Dakota State. Just walk-on opportunities to the Iowas, the Iowa States, the Minnesotas, just the Midwestern schools. And so I was committed to South Dakota for, you know, the better part of all the way through December and January. And I just remember it was coming down to the closing moments of like signing day and everything. And it was like the day before, if not the day of, that I like stayed home from school and I was watching Geno Stone's, I was watching his like announcement video, whether he was going to go to Kent State or Iowa. And I was, because for some reason in my mind, I thought that if he was going to pick Kent State, they might offer me. You know, he obviously picked Iowa and I just was like, screw it, I'm still going there. And so I told, because I had Coach Morgan telling me about, you know, the path for walk-ons and it can be done and everything. And I just grew up a Hawk fan. And in that last moment, I just decided like, I can't not go to Iowa. Like it's been my dream my whole life. I kind of just found it in myself that I realized that was really just the only reason I was committed to South Dakota was to just try to, you know, make them not tell them that I wasn't going to walk on. They called that bluff. They really did. And, you know, I'm glad it worked out for both of us.
So it was really last minute.
It really was, you know, and I had to have quite the ear. My talk with the South Dakota DB coach was not a pleasant one. I'll just tell you that.
You took the ear lashings, huh?
Yeah. He was very pissed telling me.
He told you weren't, there's no way you're going to fucking play, huh?
Yeah. Told me there's no way I was going to play. Told me I'm chasing a pipe dream. He told me I'm not good enough.
Pipe dream this.
Yeah. He told me about how he went to like Minnesota Duluth instead of walking on at the Gophers, how they won like national championships at Duluth. And just, you know, it just totally was just belittling me. And
that's going to make you want to still go there, right?
Exactly. He showed his true colors. I'm like, well, if anything, you just made me 100% sure that I shouldn't have played for you. I mean, you're.
Sounds like a dumb ex-girlfriend, dude.
Yep. So, I mean, everything's worked out for me. So,
I would say, would that ever cross your mind? When you were, you know, like, you know, you're some maybe earlier in your career, or maybe even late in your career, once you sort of, you know, you made it, quote unquote, or like earlier in the career, like when you were running sprints, you ever hear the, it's a pipe dream, like you're not going to play from that coach while you're running cut 85s?
Maybe a little bit. I really just, when I showed up and on campus and just kind of got going, I just had such a like a formulated plan in my mind about how my career was going to go.
Really?
That I didn't even like, I just like blocked out all outside noise of people who told me that I, because there were plenty of other people that close to me, people that told me stuff like that too.
Had some doubters, did we, huh?
Yeah. So, but truly and honestly, when I showed up, the guy that I looked at the most, who I wanted to like model my career after, was
Don't say, Ward. Oh fuck! I thought you were gonna say Jack Gervais, and I just didn't.
Kevin Ward.
No, it was Kevin Ward, and I saw you when you were fifth year senior and captain, special teams, walk on guy, and I was like, as a freshman, that's who I want to be. I want to be make my mark on special teams. And, you know, work my way to be a special teams captain and be a captain. And, you know, if I start a game or two and I make myself a starter, then great. But I just was so committed to just the special teams being the path to success that you were the guy that I was so focused on emulating as a freshman.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, man. I'm a little sad you set the bar so low for yourself, but I hope I was able to set a somewhat decent example and, you know, maybe prevent you from making some bad decisions along the way. I don't know, man. I will say this.
Right? I was a what?
A savage back, right?
No, I never was on. I was on punt one snap of my whole career, like 2019. I can't even remember the situation where I just went and did one snap. But in 2018, I was on three phases. And then 2019, when I started, I was on like a couple special teams sparingly. But I was never on all four. I never had that honor.
I think you outdid that honor by a long shot, dude. I will say this, dude. I remember you being on like all the scout special teams, obviously at your true freshman year, my senior year. I was, like you said, that's all I did was play special teams. So I found myself going up against you in like at least three of the four, but especially on our kickoff return, you were on scout kickoff. You were a bitch to block, dude. It was fucking annoying. I just got to tell you that right now. I don't know if I ever told you that, but you made practice hard for me in those days. And I appreciate it, but at the same time, I was like, God damn it, dude. We're doing four special teams in a row. I'm fucking tired. And I got this dude running a million miles down the field. And it's not fun. I don't like it.
He made it worth it, though.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Those guys, yeah. Plenty of guys like that on the team right now where they're the guys that like, God damn, just pump the brakes a little bit, man. Like, they're making you better.
Exactly. You want to say that in the back of your mind, but
totally,
you know, you know, the dude's like giving you a great look to what you're going to see on game day. And so all you can do is kind of like, you know what? I really appreciate the work putting in. And that guy's probably going to be on the real team the next year. And that's pretty much what happened with you. Yeah.
Yeah. More or less.
So you had this, you said a formulated plan when you walked in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And was that actually like how legit was that? Did you write that out or do you just had this like kind of step by step in your mind or you were just going to follow the Kevin Ward playbook or what did that look like?
I just had it in my mind just, you know, cause I remember my very first camp, I had these big aspirations of, you know, like being a walk-on who somehow like plays right away. And I think I was in like a special teams drill. I can't remember the exact specifics of it, but Coach Wood just like pulled me aside and was like, maybe I tried to like hop in to like a rep or something. And he pulled me aside. He was like, hey, like you're going to redshirt this year. Like, but like, come see me, come guys, keep working hard on all these special team stuff, but come see me next year. And we'll see about getting you on a unit or something. I remember he told me that like right on the field. And so just right then and there, that's what I just focused on so like implicitly in like spring ball. I was going into Coach Wood's meeting office, just sitting there watching every single one of my reps and stuff like that. And during camp, watching all my reps and just focusing so, so hard on knowing everything perfectly for special teams. So that was just kind of in my, because I just, like I said, from Kevin example and so many other like walk-on guys have just proven that is the way to get on the field. Cause when the reps are sparing at your own position and you're battling with so many other guys just for the last couple threes reps of the practice, then the only other way that you can show the coaches that you're able is on special teams. And then also obviously the weight room and the off season stuff, which is obviously what I was very strongly committed to as well.
Now we're talking. Now we're getting into the weight shark conversation.
So maybe you can put it in better terms than us as a guy who just who just finished up a great career. What would be like your top? What would be your advice of things to follow for a guy that's going to walk on and wants to make an impact on the program? You know, you obviously did it to the highest level possible, being a multi-year starter, being a captain, you know, with a great shot at going to the NFL. You know, us three, we all had our roles to play, but, you know, we ended up doing a podcast, you know, so everyone has.
So stay away from the podcast, dude. As long as possible, stay away from the podcast.
Exactly. Everyone has their level to which they can achieve. And you obviously got the most return on investment possible. What would be your advice to walk-ons and really just anyone just showing up day one a D1 football program of how to get the most out of it as you possibly can?
Yeah, I'd say that success, you got to find out truly what success means to you, is going to be for you. Like I said, formulating kind of a plan at the beginning of your career and, about what success will look like for you by the end of your career. And just being driven and committed to it, because, and I'd say what is important, is knowing and owning your role on scouts team, or in special teams, if you can, make it onto a few units, and just being the best teammate you can be, so that all the guys on the team are just point to you as one of those guys. That guy is just, he's a solid dude. Forever throughout life, that's a guy that, you want in your corner, because he works hard nonstop in the off season and, from strength and conditioning standpoint. And then he's just busting his ass on the scout team. So whether you make it on the field, as a starter or just special teams or not, that's what achieving success is. And that's how it goes for countless guys, and just not getting discouraged by if things don't go exactly according to plan, injuries, just not really getting the reps that you really think you feel that you deserve or whatever. Cause there's just countless walk-ons on the team that I'm sure you guys can remember from your years as well, that just, they never really quite played, but they just always, they stuck it out, all 4 or 5 years, and just, they're just a guy that, you're happy to have been a teammate with. That's kind of committing yourself to that stuff, just being a great teammate, just always working the hardest you can in strength and conditioning, and knowing and owning your role, whatever it is. Those three things, you can't possibly, success will find you, whether you're playing or not, or later in life. That's what I personally feel. That the Iowa football program and the culture and kind of the walk-on culture that we built that's what is very enticing and attractive about being a walk-on at Iowa.
100%, man. 100%.
Phil's nephew, Kevin, had a quote in a awards ceremony in 2016 that was, know your role, own your role, live your role. And you basically just quoted that, and you weren't even in the program yet. That's probably painted on the walls in Hanson by now, Kevin, so beloved.
Yeah. I don't know about that. but you did mention strength and conditioning a couple of times. I don't know how you felt, but personally, walking on as a DB with, one Division I offer, I felt a little intimidated. Maybe I bit off a little bit more than I can chew. Tell me if you kind of feel the same way. I felt like strength and conditioning was huge for building my confidence that, one, I belong here, and two, I can play with these guys. If you're moving weights as the other guys in your group, or if you're winning conditioning reps, I feel like, and you're you're winning competition speed reps, I feel like that can be a huge, huge confidence booster. And also, kind of like you said, the coaches take notice of who's killing it in the weight room, who's having a good off season, who's getting bigger, faster, and stronger. Is that kind of the way you felt? Is that you? Do you really? I don't know. Just kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you come in and you're the bottom of the totem pole guy, and whether or not you feel it yourself. It just kind of, there's that natural narrative that you're not maybe as talented as the scholarship guys. So when during the summer conditioning and just the whole off season stuff, when you're winning reps, and I was pretty committed to the weight room at Dowling, and we had a pretty good weight program there. So I was pretty far along already. So when I showed up and I'm able to do more than a lot of guys, and I'm winning reps and stuff like that, it's exactly like you said, it gives you confidence as to these guys aren't in another league than me. I'm just as physically talented as these guys. It's really just about opportunity. And so it really, it really kind of levels the playing field from a mental standpoint. I said, like, I'm just as strong, just as fast as these guys, just as quick. You know, what is really the difference other than if I just want to accept the mentality of being inferior? You know, you got to have the mentality that you're just as good as everybody else. And it's just nice in the weight room and everything when you kind of see just numbers that prove that mentality for you.
The walk-on mentality, dude, that absolutely. You're not inferior. You're just going to go prove to everybody that you're the alpha dog, which you started a brand. Shout out to you for having a cooler brand than us.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. You guys kind of paved the way. That was you guys, to say you guys weren't a little bit of an inspiration would definitely be false.
Jesus Christ.
I have a question. I know I've been asking a lot lately, but I got another one. So back when we first started, you know, walk-ons, we had to pay for training table. There's, you know, a few things that we couldn't do that the scholarship players got. That kind of changed when we got free meals 24/7.
Shout out Shabazz Napier.
Exactly. Was there still like a kind of community, like a little of the walk-ons, like, or, you know, was there like, you know, guys that didn't even know other guys were walk-ons, you know, it kind of blended together a little bit more.
Yeah, but as certainly as my career went on, as on the back half of it, you really couldn't tell unless you were blatantly told. It was something that I just really stopped like paying attention to whether they were or not. I don't know, at the beginning of my career, like I seemed to always know whether guys were or not just by like seeing on like Twitter, which guys signed and which guys didn't and stuff like that. But as I got later into my career, it just wasn't anything I was paying attention to. And I think a lot of guys would say the same, where you just really didn't even know or care. It's just 30 new guys showed up and they, you know, they, by the way they acted and the way they kind of just carried themselves, it really was just, it was inconsequential.
Cream rises to the top, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You just don't even. Yeah, I remember that. I'll still never forget. It was just like this most backhanded compliment. It was like 2015, and I wasn't put on scholarship until 16 and 17. But I've been, this is my second year starting. And I remember like three guys talking about like scholarships and like asking me if I had gotten my books yet. And I was like, yeah, I'm not on scholarship, so I don't know the answer to that question. And it was just like, it was very awkward. Like, and they looked at me like, you know, like the, oh shit, sorry. But also like, how the fuck are you not on scholarship? I do think, and there's no evidence for this, but I just somehow think that Iowa is different than other places in that sense. I just, there really isn't a line there. You just don't know who is who. And I think it's great. You mentioned Dally.
Talk about getting the, speaking of Cleavers getting put on, talk about the head man. How did he let you know that you were going to get one?
Yeah, that's a moment I'll never forget. 2019. So obviously I started the whole year, 2019 against Nebraska. So our last game of the year, that was Keith Duncan's ever so memorable, you know, field goal, game winning field goal. So me, Keith, and Shooter, we were all walk-ons that were starting that whole year. And just after that, you know, you guys know how the locker room was after that game, just awesome, tons of energy. And you know how KF goes around, shakes everybody's hand after the game. And he shook mine, and then he just held it a little extra long and pulled me in and said, "You're not going to have to worry about paying for school anymore."
Bro, and I got goosebumps right now.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. And you know, it wasn't announced to the whole team and everything, but obviously I told Riley a couple seconds after, and then Riley made it known to everybody. And then obviously Keith and Shooter obviously probably have a very similar little story of how theirs happened. It was just right. All three of us right there got put on scholarship. We're celebrating, you know, the last game of the regular season, winning the Heroes Trophy, with the game winning kick by Keith. And it was awesome. I had media that day. Cause I got my first career interception then too. So I was pretty late getting out to my parents. And by the time I was out to them, the media had already known about it. So just, I walked out and I saw my parents and they already knew and I already knew they knew. And it was just like, just huge smiles all around. And it was just like such a burden off my back, because I felt no pressure from my parents about that, about getting on scholarship, but there is that like self-imposed burden or pressure. Cause I mean, and I was pretty on going back to that decision I made so long ago. It was a spring on everybody. I was the only one who really knew in my heart. Like I told my parents like a couple of days before that I was thinking about it and they were like, Whoa, we're all set up for South Dakota and everything. Like, where's this coming from? But they gave me so much confidence just going in that they believed in me and that they wanted what was best for me. And if I felt this was best for me, then so did they. So, but there's, like I said, there was that self-imposed kind of burden that I put on myself from that moment where I turned down not paying for school to paying for school. So that moment, having that relieved was incredible.
Is that emotional?
It was emotional for sure. And I think I might've had a couple, I mean, I had some grandparents and some other family there too, that would just made it even kind of even more awesome.
I know that feeling. I know that feeling big time. I'm not going to get into it. But I know that feeling big time. Mm-hmm. Did you go to anywhere before Dowling or did they recruit you or how'd that happen?
No, I was,
you and all your buddies that didn't actually live in Des Moines.
Yeah. You were in the feeder system, so you were one of the proud few.
It's funny. My dad grew up in West Des Moines his whole life, and he actually went to Valley. Mm. So it's funny how that story comes about because my mom, she's from like Aurora, suburb of Chicago, and she went to a Catholic high school and everything, and they met at Iowa. But so I went to this Catholic elementary school called St. Francis, right next to my house. Cause that's where it was our house. I walked to school every single day, you know, K-8. And, you know, my mom's reasoning was, oh, it's the school it's right there. Like it just makes sense for him to school there. And my dad was like, oh, okay. He's still going to Valley. Like, and by the time it was like middle school, he felt I was out of his control. Cause all my friends, I grew up, you know, going to Dowling games. It was by that time, all my friends are going to Dowling. Like I was already going there. And he said, before he even knew what happened, I was going there.
Yeah. And the 63 straight championships that they had won at that point had something to do with it too, I'm sure. I mean, God damn it. How many did you win? You won four in a row?
I was on varsity for my sophomore, junior, senior year, but all four, the streak started when I was a freshman.
Oh, good for you. That's great. Happy for you. You and Ryan Boyle and Wagner and fucking John Wiz, just all these state championships. I tell you what,
feels bad, man.
Feels bad. You know what? And you know what? They're just replacing Jack with Quinn, who comes from CR Xavier, right?
Yeah.
Just another fucking recruiting Catholic school. I can't believe it. Just like, you know what? Just like Homer Glenn. Just like the Celtics.
Good old Providence Catholic, man. 9 state titles. Actually, 10. We got 10.
Oh, okay.
Kevin had to drive like 90 minutes to school every day.
No, my high school was actually probably closer than you live to yours, Drake.
Yeah. Jack, we don't want to keep you forever, but I do want to mention this. We had a little scare on the water out there. And I can't imagine that was not a humbling experience for you. What was that like? And what were the thoughts going through your mind when, and you can share as much or as little about that as you want, but I think it was pretty well documented over, the media that you did interviews with or that reported on it. That's kind of a scary deal. Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of spun a whole new perspective on a lot of things for me. Cause obviously, you know, my friend Cole, I grew up playing sports with him, you know, my whole life. And he was always great athlete growing up and everything. He was great high school athlete. The fact that he obviously lost his leg and just the way that he like responded to that, that put a lot of things in perspective for me about, you know, just how to respond to adversity. And I've obviously never been, many people have never been faced with adversity that extreme. And just the way that he responded to it and the kind of the spin that he, on his new outlook on life because of it, is really opened my eyes. And there's nobody that I know that could have handled that better than he did. I know for an absolute fact, I couldn't have handled it that well. That would have been detrimental to me, and my mental state for sure. But, he's really made the best out of it. And he's got a great prosthetic leg now. He's able to play golf. You know, he's living his life. And, I don't have much more respect for anybody besides him, just kind of for how he's handled that. But, that's kind of the main thing that I really took out of that whole ordeal. But obviously there's a lot of details in the ins and outs about what physically happened there. But, yeah. That's kind of what I really took out of that from a mental standpoint.
Well, I almost took Kevin's head off on a jet ski one time. So you're not the only one that was having fun in the summer, just trying to, you know, so that was good. Do you ever think about that and think, wow, that could have been the other way around? And like how, I don't know if you're a guy who thinks like things happen for a reason or maybe not, but like you were, you know, like the story was supposed to go that way or somehow. And like, now you can tell that story. He can tell that story. You're playing football. You get to, you know, keep playing. Maybe you have a chance at a potential NFL career. I know Kevin said you have a great shot at the NFL, and I would have to agree with him. I think Jake/Jack Gervais, mm-hmm. who, it's Jack now. It's unfortunately we have to call him Jack. Your name is also Jack, but I don't know if you saw that NFL graphic that they put out on Twitter. Yeah. Okay. Good. So it's Jack Gervais, and obviously he was probably a guy that you looked up to as well a little bit. And now he's kind of laying out that blueprint at the next level. Do you think about that at all as you pursue the next level of football?
Entirely. I you know, Jake was definitely my biggest mentor when I was on the team. He kind of was a major, major factor into when I was talking about that, the way that I was able to snowball my knowledge by being able to understand things conceptually. He was a major factor in that. He, you know, during camp, when, you know, we just that short window of time we have between practice and meetings, I was always asking if he could come up to the film room and watch the practice with me and just kind of tell me about what he's thinking about and everything like that. And he was always there to do that for me. And I just always felt like he kind of just had his arm around me, kind of just showing me the way. And I am so, I respect him so much for that. And that's, I try to carry on to guys like Quinn and the other walk-ons. That's, and whether they're in my position room or not, I try to lend that same kind of arm around their shoulder, kind of steer them the right way, kind of, you know, show them the way, just because that's what was so beneficial to my success. I truly feel that way, as guys like that. So, definitely still in contact with him all the time. And he's telling me about how the trials and tribulations of being kind of an undrafted free agent and bouncing between active and practice squad and stuff like that. He's lent me tons and tons of great advice, and insight about how that whole process works. So he's still kind of showing me the way, just like he did when I first showed up. So mad respect for Jack.
You can sleep well knowing that you're a way better football player than Jack Gervais.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it, you know, like I know it's probably not how you immediately think about it, but there's gotta be some level to it where you're like, okay, Jake started, like you probably feel similar to the level he is in the weight room and what he can do on the field. And like, man, to see someone just like, I don't know if he's doing it right. Like he's not a starting NFL safety, But from the walk-on's perspective, he sure is doing it. Like he doesn't run a podcast, right? So, man, that's got to feel good for you. I mean, fuck, you get to watch him play today, right? Like he's,
yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's sick. That's really, really cool. Kevin Drake, any other questions before we let this man go? This guy's going to play in the league, so we're going to have him on multiple other times to talk about plenty of other stuff, but anything.
Can we do a walk-ons and walk-on mentality collab t-shirt?
Yes.
So that's, as of right now, our like orders are actually halted because we're putting 50% of all the profits from that into this fund that we're going to disperse to walk-on guys on the team. And so between me, Tommy and Zach, we've hammered out, the guys, the five guys that we're going to be able to give, a little bit of scholarship money to and go right to their U-bill and everything. And so we're hammering out all the compliance, issues about that, and we're getting that all hammered out. So we've halted all the orders and stuff right now so that we can have a kind of a final grand total, if you will. So Zach's the true figurehead of this business. He's the genius behind a lot of this. So I'll confer with the boys on when we get that all hammered out and we kind of get a nice ribbon on that, how we're gonna get that thing going.
We could reach out to our people, have them take care of the logistics. We put together a t-shirt and everything that sells from our t-shirt,
everything.
We'll do the same thing to the fund.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'll talk to the boys and see how that's going.
We'll talk to Zach because I handle all the behind the scenes stuff with this too. So obviously we got to have Zach on because he's going to be a great interview because of his story. Kev, you got anything else for the fellow safety?
Yeah, man, I got a lot of questions for him, but we'll save him for another time, dude. We'll let you get on with your day. One quick question. Where are you training at for the NFL? Iowa City or elsewhere?
I'm down here currently in Fort Myers, Florida, training at this place called X3 Performance. This guy was previously in Nashville. He just built this brand new facility down here in Fort Myers. It's where Nick Neiman trained. He was with him when he was in Nashville. So this new facility we got down here, Nick Neiman's picture in there. So, yep, Valk's down here too.
He's doing all right.
Yeah, he's doing.
That's an elite place to spend your winter too, because it's terrible in Iowa right now. It's not nice in Nashville either.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
cool, man. Best of luck. That's all I got for you, man. We'll let you get on with your day and watch some football here.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on, Jack. We'd love to have you on some more. Talk about, whatever happens. We'd love to talk about whatever happens, right? And we appreciate it.
Why don't you come on and talk Hawks next year?
Yeah, we fucking We love the brand, the walk-on, all that, obviously. And the fact that it's going back to some guys on the team, we've been thinking about doing something like that with our stuff as well. So appreciate you having you on. Fucking pleasure to watch you play over the last few years. It's been amazing. And now there's some big shoes to fill. So hopefully your guy Quinn or somebody else can fill those up. Episode 288 of the Walk-Ons, presented to you by DRF Sports. Don't forget about it. We got sponsors over here, Jack. So it's not quite on this level yet. DRF Sports sponsors the show. Thanks to them. 288, Jack Kerner. Hope you guys enjoyed. We'll talk to you guys on Thursday. Peace.